The lights are on red. We're away.
MotoGPOD, the internet radio show about motorcycle road racing. Today is Friday, January 16th, 2009. This is episode number 160, and I am Bob Hayes, your host, here today, as always, to bring you some news, information, gossip, chatter, and the best of motorcycle road racing. So, we got a good show today. We had a call with Jules, and we start our 2008 season review. So we're breaking it up. We're going to cover over the next several shows. We're going to review the 2008 season race by race, talking about things, because it breaks up nicely into segments. This first segment that we're talking about here was the first three races at Qatar, Jerez, and Estoril. And we were calling it the Lorenzo show because it really looked like Jorge Lorenzo was going to be just setting the world on fire. So those shows, those races, are what we're talking about. And some other stuff, of course, always what's going on in the news and that kind of thing, a little bit of that. Before we get to all of that, let's see, we got some administrative type stuff to deal with here. First of all, big giant shout out thank you to Mark Harris, kindly donated to the MotoGPOD cause. Do appreciate it, helping pay for the bandwidth and the Skype bills and all that kind of stuff that we have going on. And also a big shout out to Don Rhodes, who was very, very kind enough to send me a couple of beers from Cooperstown Brewery. Which unfortunately I don't have one of the bottles here, but they're Belgian beers. One's a Saison and one's a Quadruple or something along those lines. And they're in these really cool, big, giant bottles and everything. And I have to admit, I haven't tried one yet because I'm a little afraid of opening one. You know, I think I'm going to open it with a friend and we'll sample it together. This beer just might be too stout for Bob. I know that's shocking to hear, but you never know. So, whatever. Thank you very, very much, Mark. And thank you, Don. I do appreciate that a lot. I appreciate it. It's really great. You know, Don sent me a box, sent me these two gigantic beers inside a box for a Cisco, piece of equipment. I think it was a core router or something like that. And so I come home and there's this Cisco box sitting here outside my door, and it's like, wow, you know, I can't believe that getting stolen. Whatever. Let's see, other news stuff. News that happened today, right after we did our call with Jules, and some stuff that we didn't actually mention in the thing. First of all, news release came out today that unfortunately Red Bull, the Red Bull AMA US Rookies Cup, or whatever it's actually a full-on official name, is not going to happen in 2009. And this is tragic. This is a bummer. But Red Bull lost some, you know, another big sponsor that was helping to pay for the bills and all of this and that and the other. And they just cannot afford to do the USA Rookies Cup. So that's a tragedy. That's a shame. I'm not sure how far along they had gotten in the process. You know, are there a bunch of 13-year-olds that now do not have a ride, that kind of a thing? Yeah, probably. And that's awful. The European Red Bull Rookies Cup is going to be reduced from 8 rounds down to 6. So they're still doing the Rookies Cup over there in Europe. And we had at least one American in it last year. Not 100% sure what's going on this year. But in any case, Red Bull is sort of reducing their Rookies Cup commitment and all of that. And this is just part of this whole global meltdown that we are seeing. And this is reflected in Kawasaki not going to be in MotoGP in 2009, which Jules and I are going to talk about a little bit later. As you'll recall, in last week's show, we talked about it being a rumor and things were still happening and this and that and the other. We're going to talk about this in the show, so I don't want to spoil the call. But in a nutshell, the latest press releases from Kawasaki is that not only is Kawasaki the factory not going to participate in MotoGP, but Kawasaki the factory is not going to provide motorcycles to anyone else in MotoGP 2009. And primarily that's because they don't want to see, you know, they don't want to provide these 2008 motorcycles that have not been developed to a privateer team and see them finish last every single time. So, you know, whatever. But like I said, Jules and I talk about that in a minute. The other piece of news, and this is one that Jules and I sort of meant to talk about but never kind of got around to, because we have talked about this several shows ago, that in 2010, the British Grand Prix round is going to move from Donington to Silverstone. And when we talked about it, it was mostly a rumor. Now, however, it is official that in 2010, the British Grand Prix is going to be at Silverstone. Now, that's great in some ways for the teams because the garage facilities and also for the fans because the fan facilities at Silverstone are much better than at Donington and the garage facilities as well. Basically, the garages at Donington are somewhat antediluvian. However, the track itself at Donington is so superior, especially for motorcycle racing, to Silverstone, that this is a shame because Donington is one of the classic tracks of motorcycle racing. It's got this, it's a natural, they used to be roads and now they turned it into a track. So they're flowing. They go up and down some hills and this and that and the other. And other than the section that they call the car park section where they put in a fake chicane to make the track longer and all of that, the stop and go and whatnot. Other than that, Donington is just, it's perfect. It's beautiful. It's old school. Silverstone is, yes, admittedly, also old school. However, it's made on one of the old air bases in England, so it's dead flat. And it's just, you got a long front straight and all of that, but the rest of it is relatively very, very boring as far as a track is concerned compared to Donington. It could have been worse, I suppose, in some ways. However, I am sad to see that the MotoGP round is going to move from Donington to Silverstone in 2010. Kropotkin compared it to moving the U.S. Grand Prix from Laguna Seca to Fontana, which, as we affectionately call it over here, or semi-affectionately, Fontucky, which is an inside roval, nasty, boring, horrible track. It's a little bit along those lines. On the plus side, like I said, at least, the teams are going to have better facilities. The fans will have better facilities and all of that sort of thing. Now, the funniest thing is that Formula One's doing the opposite. They're moving from Silverstone to Donington. So Donington's going to be building a whole bunch of garages and fan facilities and all that to get ready for Formula One just in time for MotoGP to leave. So that's a little strange. Okay, that about covers all the late breaking news that we have. So why don't we go ahead and get on with the call with Jules. So here we go, Jules and I talking about Season Review 2008. All right, we got Jules on the phone. How are you doing today, Jules?
Good, Bob. How are you?
I am also good. So we had our show last week. We talked about the big news of the hiatus, which was Kawasaki. And, of course, just like we said in the call, things are changing so super rapidly. And I think it was literally something like, I don't know, something stupid, like half an hour after I posted the show, news came down that Kawasaki was pulling out. So the way things stand right now, there have been official press releases saying that Kawasaki is not racing in MotoGP in 2009. And not only is the Kawasaki factory not participating, but there will be no Kawasaki motorcycles on the grid. This is what Kawasaki, the factory, has said. Right. But there's been some other news as well.
Yeah, so. because today, when we're recording this show, it's on Wednesday, January 14th. Today, Olivier Jacques is out at the Eastern Creek testing. So on the Kawasaki, so and then Spalletta released a statement saying, they will definitely be on the grid. Kawasaki will definitely be on the grid. They have an agreement to be supplying bikes for until 2011. There's no penalty, but we expect them to have bikes on the grid for 2009, and I'll let them off for 2010, 2011.
He
basically says in exchange, that's what he says. He says, I reaffirmed that I wouldn't accept the contract being broken. And since they told us all expenses were covered, I proposed to them to race in 2009. And in exchange, I would let them off in 2010, 2011. That's a direct quote. Well translated.
Awesome. That's awesome. That's such classic sort of Dorna speak.
Yeah.
And the thing is Espoleta's comments, I'm kind of inclined to sort of discount because I think he's doing some frantic backroom dealing to try to get something going on. But the fact that Olivier Jacques is testing, that's a little weird. It's like, well
I think basically everybody's just making sure that they've got all their bases covered. If they do return, they don't want to return completely screwed, right? I mean, they do have the bikes. And,
right, right.
And they already paid these riders and mechanics some part of their contract. So they may as well ride the bike around and right. just in case something happens and they end up being on the grid.
This is true. And also, I mean, yeah, granted, like this test session was probably actually a done deal paid for a long time ago. You know, yeah. If Kawasaki didn't go, they would have saved such a pittance of money,
right.
You know, a few airfares and stuff like that. It's like, you might as well go. Because Kawasaki did say that, yeah, we're gone for 2009 because the economy is such a disaster, blah, blah, blah. But no, we will be back in MotoGP.
Yes, they did say that.
That was said in there, yeah. So, I guess I can see that. That does make a certain amount of sense. Now, I mean, going out on a limb here, because I did that last week and it didn't turn out very well, where I said that I thought that Kawasaki was going to be racing. But going out on another limb, I would have a hunch to say that we're not going to see Kawasaki's on the grid now, as of the week, you know, the week's news that we've seen and everything. Despite Espelita's best efforts to the contrary, I would be surprised to see Kawasaki's, race by a privateer team or something like that.
Sounds great. So we're going to have Kawasaki on the grid in Qatar. Great.
Yeah, yeah, because I jinxed it. Is that what you're saying? Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So, but I don't know. It's kind of interesting. It's new stuff. And then, unfortunately, this leads us to another post on MotoGP Matters. And I'm not sure. Did you read the references that Kropotkin put up there?
No. Usually when I read Kropotkin, I basically just assume
it. It's good. It's good because he's done his homework. Yeah. And basically, in this case, the homework is that there's rumors that Suzuki is ready to pull out of MotoGP for 2009, and that would be disastrous. As Kropotkin said in his blog post, you know, one factory leaving is sort of embarrassing. Two factories leaving like that is really bad.
Yeah. Yep. I mean, we'd still actually have the 15 bikes, so it's still a world championship.
Right.
But,
yeah.
But it's pretty sad state of affairs. We got 5 Ducatis, 6 Hondas, and 4 Yamahas.
Right.
You know, right. Barely making it, basically.
Right. It's starting to look like the 250 series or something, where it's such a small number of manufacturers' motorcycles.
Yes, yeah, so you might as well start. You know, like maybe Honda could have a couple of bikes named something else, like a Derby, you know, or. Galera or something.
manufactured under license.
Right, exactly.
Yes, in a Japanese factory by Japanese workers. And also going on in Kropotkin's blog post, the other thing that he mentioned is that there has still been no confirmation of Rizla, the Dutch cigarette paper company, extending their contract with Suzuki. And that is also not good. They have announced they will. Rizla has announced that they will not be sponsoring the British Superbike Suzuki team, with which they have a longer history than they do with the MotoGP team. So it's a little bit of a bummer. And are they going to come back to MotoGP? I don't know. And if they don't, can Suzuki afford to be there without them?
Right.
Yeah, which they've done in the past. Suzuki's been out there without a title sponsor, but that was in comparatively fat years. Some of the numbers of these manufacturers, I'm not sure. I haven't seen too much about motorcycles specifically, but some of the car numbers are shocking.
They're terrible. Done. But the interesting thing is that motorcycles always do much better during recessions and depressions and stuff.
Oh, really?
Honda, in fact, says that it was the motorcycle motorcycle division that got them through the oil crisis in the 70s and the recession in the 80s. So, kind of interesting.
Yeah, well, it makes a lot of sense.
I mean, we're not talking about Desmosedetes here. We're talking about selling 250 dual sport bikes all over the world, whatever. I mean,
money making motorcycles.
Money making motorcycles.
And people are buying them because they're cheaper to insure, cheaper to run, cheaper to garage or what have you, all sorts of things. You can save a lot of money with a motorcycle, which you, like living in San Francisco, you can certainly attest to this. The amount of money they pay for a car, to drive into the city, to park it,
especially.
Yeah, all that stuff. And, you can save so much with a motorcycle because, you know, shoot, how long could you get away with just parking that illegally on the sidewalk? You know, depending on where you're at.
2 years right now, 2 years so far. And I don't pay tolls because I get the HOV lane between 7 and 10 a.m. And I save on gas. And, I mean, everything is just ends up cheaper. And I don't have to, and the best part for me, the best part is I don't have to wait in traffic.
Right. So if you can, you know, if you can pull yourself up with a, you know, a cheapo, you know, what are those the 250 dual sport type motorcycles and stuff that we're talking about, you know, $3,000, $4,000, maybe $5,000, Ninja 250, super popular motorcycle lately, you know, a relatively small amount. So, you know, you could do something crazy like just let your car get repoed that you're paying, you know, $450 a month for, run down, put a motorcycle on the credit card, and you can still get to work and you haven't had to, you know, completely go bankrupt or anything
right,
like that.
Right.
You know,
like yeah. when the gas prices went up in 2006, scooters, bicycles, and I'm sure smaller motorcycle sales jumped hugely. I know bicycle and scooter sales went through the roof.
Yeah.
So anyway, so I think that companies that have a big motorcycle wing actually will do fine. I mean that department of their
comparatively speaking, right? Yeah. That department
will do well. Right. You know, a company like Ducati will be okay.
Well, they've got the monsters and stuff like that that are quite a bit cheaper. And everything is relative. So.
Yeah, and there's still Ducati is not a, you know, lower class middle class motorcycle. It's a upper class motorcycle, and those people are remaining in the upper class. They're just, you know, it's all relative, like you said. So.
Right, exactly. Yeah, the rich tend to stay rich and all of that. Yeah, yeah.
The rest of us pay.
yeah. Hey, you have a Ducati, Mr. Upper Class. So
I have a Ducati that hasn't run in like 3 months, and I can't fix it because I can't afford to fix it.
Uh-oh. Yeah. Well, hopefully you'll get that fixed for next year. So, all right.
It
so
is
moving
next year.
On.
Oh, all right. So it is
yeah,
next year.
Yeah, before next season. There we go. Next track day season. Moving on, I don't know if we want to cover that a lot. Did you have anything more to kind of go on that? Because I don't want to get it stuck myself, personally. I don't want to get stuck in the same trap that I fell into last week of making all sorts of prognostications that came to naught.
Let's do this review we've been talking about. So the idea is kind of we decided to do a review of the season, and we don't want to do it all in one shot. And David Emmett Kropotkin and I tried this once in 2007, at the beginning of 2007, and it was really bad. it just went on and on and on because we spent too much time. So this time I think it'd be better if we just split it up into like five shows. I think we decided to do five different parts to the season,
right?
Because there's a good way to divide these. Like the first part that we're doing today, let's call this the Lorenzo show. Or actually, what I like in the MotoGP season review that by Julian Ryder, he calls one of the rounds the ego has landed, and I think that might be a good way to call this part.
yes, that's excellent. And unfortunately, I have not yet received my MotoGP 2008 season guide. I know I am lacking, but it is on order. It should be here shortly.
It's one of the finest, as always.
It's always such a great book. Yeah. But okay, we digress. We're not getting paid by Julian Ryder, so no free advertising for you.
Right. Anyway, so the first. Those three races. I mean, that this part of it, we're going to cover Qatar, Jerez, and Estoril. Those are the three races where everybody just kind of lost their lower jaw regarding Lorenzo.
Right, and I liked your Lorenzo show. I mean, the ego has landed is clever, but the Lorenzo show for those first three rounds was amazing. And I remember the shows that we did, our podcast that we did. Our jaws were also, you know, amazed, and we were there was quite a few prognostications of what is going to be going on, and you know, Lorenzo's the greatest rookie that we've ever seen, and this and that and the other.
Right.
So, okay. race opener,
yeah, Qatar in the dark.
In the dark, first night race ever for MotoGP. Very skeptical of it, but with the way the lighting and everything, that's the one thing that sticks out in my head about that round. Is just how striking it looked.
It looked amazing.
It was beautiful.
And
it
all
was
the teams
really cool.
Really took advantage of the lighting, and Ducati had this fantastic paint paint job that they did.
Sparkles and
They added metallic, and it was kind of a different kind of red. And Alice team put like these incredible glowing decals all over their bikes, and the Rizla bikes had some special metallic stuff on them. It just looked so cool.
It really, really did. And I mean, you know, to digress a tiny bit, MotoGP is a show, and part of the show is more than just simply reading the results on the sheet. It's seeing it, seeing the photos, or seeing the telecast, or both, or being there, or what have you. And it was striking. It was good for the show.
Oh yeah,
yeah.
And we had, you know, I mean, the reason for doing the night thing. I mean, think about the fact that this track was basically converted to a night racing track. Starting in about mid summer of the previous year of 2007, mainly because it was so hot,
right?
And so because of the weather, they decided to run the race at night, and it turned out that it wasn't such a good idea because it is the desert and it gets cold
at night, right?
More cold.
Huge temperature differential the temperature differential is insane.
Yeah, and in fact, they were tested. You know, a lot of the riders were saying that the temperature difference between testing and race time tests, so like the morning test, quote unquote, which was actually in the late afternoon, they were still racing in daylight or twilight, and it was hot. And then by the time it was qualifying time or race time, it was just super cold, and it was so different that it was very hard for the bikes to get set up. Basically, most of the testing was done during qualifying.
Yeah, exactly. And the thing is the decision to move it to the first race of the season was made before the decision to change it to a night race.
Yes,
or at least before those things were finalized. And what was the date? It was late March, wasn't it? Do you have the date in front of you here? Because I'm looking for
March
9th.
March 9th. It was early
March.
Early March.
Oh, early March.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, you know, I don't want to, but I've been in that general area in early March, and it's still cold. At night, you know, you're wearing a jacket, and this race would be better off like 6 weeks to 2 months or so, at least later in the year, which they actually tried to do. But Qatar insists on being the first round because that's the contract that they signed. They want to be the first round, which
that's
is
right.
Why our season this year is starting April something. You know, it's shifted up a little bit, which is going to help.
Yeah, yeah, because they obviously want to keep it a night race.
Yeah, it makes the most sense. I mean, it's too hot in the daytime when they were. I mean, what month was it that they were racing Qatar? It was just stupid. It's just stupid hot, and it's just miserable for everybody concerned. So have it as a night race, but you can't do that. You know, at the end of February because it's still too cold.
Right.
Right. So whatever. Why don't we talk? What did we want to more about?
Well,
Qatar?
So the big surprise, of course, was the qualifying. You know, first of all, you know, Ducati did pretty well on the first test, but then for qualifying, it was all Yamaha because we had an all Yamaha front row.
Right, right.
With Lorenzo, first time on a MotoGP bike during qualifying, on qualifying tires. Well, I mean, he did some testing on qualifying tires, but first time, you know, actually competing.
First time
qualifying tires.
In anger, yes,
in anger,
exactly.
Yeah, exactly. And he ends up in the front row. And second is Toseland, who's also a rookie. And then Edwards in third on the Michelin.
So right, you had the two satellite bikes filling out the front row. Where is your other factory guy?
That's right.
Yeah.
And Rossi was seventh on his Bridgestones. It was obviously, he was still getting used to the Bridgestones. We had Stoner on the second row. And I guess the other big surprise was the Vizioso was ninth, so he was not up front.
Yeah, and I don't recall the details on that of that being necessarily. I mean, he's still on the third row.
Yeah. I think they basically all got caught out by the temperature problems, and some teams just got the right stuff put on, and some teams did. I think Rossi would have been closer to the front if he had been on Michelin's in this particular race.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and, certainly. Because, I mean, yeah. that's the difference between those three. You know, Lorenzo, Tozzi, and Edwards were all running Michelin's. Yeah. Rossi was running Bridgestone's. And I think there's an argument to be said that Bridgestone made a lot of progress through the season.
Yes.
And so not only was Rossi getting used to a new tire, but I think Bridgestone was getting used to quite a few things as well. And then it was also damp, if I recall, on the track quite a bit.
Yeah.
And that's going to affect things. So.
Right. So that was the qualifying, and then we had a race.
Yeah, exactly.
which was very exciting. We had a for the first six laps or so, anyway, or seven laps.
It is MotoGP after all.
Yeah. So Lorenzo did not get a good start. The guy who led the race for the first, I believe, from this chart, looks like five laps. Was Pedrosa, and then Rossi caught up with Pedrosa. They had a little bit of a battle, not much. Pedrosa basically gets passed, and that's it.
Right.
So that's they did have I think two or three passes. Rossi went in front, so that was his first the first time he was leading a race on the Bridgestones, and but then he got caught by Stoner, who had a good start. Worked his way up past Lorenzo, past Pedrosa, and then basically just took off. And he ended up winning by 5 seconds or something like that.
Yeah, a considerable margin, right? He owned the field. Yep. That's PWNED.
And Lorenzo, yeah. who had the pole, kind of fell back a little bit. He got knocked back by Rossi pretty harshly, from what I recall. And then Danny got past him, but he ended up getting Danny back, and then he was circulating pretty far ahead of Danny Pedrosa, and ended up in second. Danny Pedrosa got third, also pretty far ahead of the fourth place, which was the real exciting battle to the end, because Rossi held that position for the last 9-10 laps, and right at the very end. Pretty much in the last corner, I think, right? I don't remember exactly, but I think it was
one right
of the last
there.
Corners. Yeah. Dovizioso came past him. Actually, Dovizioso came past him earlier in the lap, and then Rossi retook him, but then Dovi retook him again at the end and finished ahead of him. And actually, Toseland almost got Rossi as well.
Right. Right, because the first three, Stoner, Lorenzo, Pedrosa, were separated by roughly 5 seconds each. You know, Stoner 5 seconds back, Lorenzo 5 seconds back, Pedrosa, and then another not quite 3 seconds back to Dovizioso. But Dovizioso and Rossi were only separated by 100ths of a second.
Right, right.
About
12 1,000ths. Anyway,
yes.
It was very close, and then Tozzi was about a half a second back from Rossi at the end, and I think everybody was very impressed with Lorenzo, obviously, because he had the pole and a podium on his first time out. But Dovi also, I think, really impressed.
I think so too. Yeah, Dovi was on the JIR Team Scott, Honda. Which we didn't have a lot of necessary, great expectations for. Lorenzo's on a factory Yamaha. He's going to be expected to do relatively well. Granted, I think he surpassed expectations, but whatever. But Dovizioso, I think, leapt, just leaps and bounds beyond expectations.
Yep. And, so basically the season kind of started off where it left off, with Stoner just completely owning the race, going off on his own. He didn't win by, 5 seconds is huge, obviously, but he kind of held that distance. Whenever Lorenzo sped up and got a better lap, he answered in typical Stoner fashion. He just looked over at the boards and answered, and it was a very comfortable win for him, and I think everybody was kind of thinking, I know we were talking about it, like, oh God, here we go again. Stoner runaways.
Right. It's going to be the Stoner season kind of thing, yeah. But Yeah, it was. I enjoyed the race. I really did. I mean, part of it is always the, you know, the first race of the new season and everything is going to be the greatest MotoGP season ever. Like I said, it was strikingly beautiful. You know, the under the lights thing, because I had my doubts. You know, racing at night. Wow. You know, but they did such a great job with the lighting, so that the riders could see. And then they also the lighting, I think, did something for the cameras. Just, you know, and you'll understand more of what the hell's going on here about cameras, but just something about the way artificial light, you know, lights up the subject, you know, it looked really cool. And, yeah. And so, you know, it was first race of the season. It looks really cool. It was like, it's exciting, et cetera, et cetera. Yeah. I thought it was pretty good stuff.
Definitely. Now, I did not see the night race in Formula One. How did that compare to you? Did you watch it?
Yeah, I did. It was a great race. It was,
it's a Sepang, right?
Singapore.
Oh, sorry. Singapore.
Yeah. Street race in Singapore. And, now, boy, here's Bob sounding lame here, but was that the one that was like the ending season ending thing? I don't think it wasn't, but it also
Brazil, but
yeah, it the same thing though with Singapore though, that it looked really cool. They didn't have near the same, I think, success with making the track evenly lit and making it sort of better for the drivers and stuff that MotoGP did. But it was also a road course, you know, actually a street course, you know, real city streets blocked off. So they had a lot of hurdles to overcome. But it was an exciting race. The track itself, the way they've laid out the circuit, the way they put the barriers up and stuff, there was a lot of tight spots and everything. And I love Formula One. People were complaining that they need to fix this. There's certain corners that are just flat out hideously dangerous or somewhat unrealistic. And of course, it was also very bumpy because it's a street course. But looks wise, it looked great. So, and they did somewhat of the same thing. Actually, that a huge feature, about the color of the visors that the drivers were wearing, which I don't remember them mentioning that at all in MotoGP.
Interesting. I think that it was the first time in Qatar, it was the first time we actually saw Rossi's eyes during the race.
Yeah.
Because they were all wearing fairly clear visors. I believe some riders did have a little bit of tint on them.
Yeah, you know, I'm sure they did because according to the Formula One guys, you know, some of them had like the amber color, some of them had flat clear, some of them had, you know, I don't know, rose-colored glasses, you know, Jensen Button. But whatever, you know, there were several different types of visors, and it is. If you've ever worn sunglasses at night, you know, you can get a huge different effect, a lot of contrast differences and things, you know, the stuff tends to pop. In a much different way with different colors, and they were finding that, you know, the they were talking about it. The drivers tried this one and that one, and oh, I'm going to use that one, you know, that sort of thing. And that was one of the things we missed on the MotoGP side of, you know, little minutiae, details, trivia, bringing up as visor selection. And, you know, as silly as and boring as it may sound, I actually thought it was kind of interesting. Cool. So there's our token Formula One stuff.
Right.
Did we mention that you won the Formula One blog Bravado Award last week there, Jules? I have to digress.
I did actually listen to the show, and I was just laughing hysterically about it because
yes.
I didn't even think that it was going to make it into the show. Anyway,
I must have plowed right over it without even it really registering, and then on editing it didn't catch it. I mean, I would have left it in, but yeah. So Jules made a comment on last week's show that won him the Formula One blog podcast Bravado Award from Todd and Grace, and apparently you get a signed 8.5 by 11 gloss, or no, 8 by 10 glossy of Grace. Apparently, possibly even wearing a very snug shirt or something, according to the show. And so I think that's great. And I like to think that I was a little bit sort of involved in all of that, Jules. That I was your sort of your supporting guy. That you've got the thing. So Jules, you're clapping. Yay!
I'll send you a copy.
yes. But in any case, of course, if you haven't heard the spiel, if you don't listen to Formula One blog, check it out, because they don't just talk about Formula One. They talk about all kinds of stuff, including a lot about MotoGP. Very, very, very great show. Grace and Todd over there do a fantastic fantastic job, and they do their little awards every week. I shouldn't say they're little. That sounds condescending. They do these awards every week that they sort of give out. Best Post, the Fashion Award, which I always think is super entertaining, and the Bravado Award, and occasionally, every now and then, they'll do something else. And whatever. So Jules picks up the Bravado Award. I think it's a red letter day. Jules should mark his calendar.
All right.
So, there. Moving on. Talked about Formula One. Talked about night racing.
Yeah, you have to listen to the show to find out why I won the award, because we're not going to discuss it anymore.
No, exactly. That's last week's show. You guys have to listen to last week's show, listen to that, then listen to Formula One blog. Let's move on in MotoGP 2008, because we're going in the Wayback Machine.
And the Lorenzo show continues.
Yes, exactly. Part deux.
Part deux. So we're going to win Spain, which obviously... is an important place for Lorenzo.
Yes,
and,
indeed.
And of course, it's one of the most wildest rounds from... I've never been, obviously, but from everybody who's been to Jerez for the MotoGP race, it's supposed to be the most insane thing, what happens to that town and what happens
it's
to the
on my
racetrack.
List, dude. It really is. I mean,
just to see
it's
that.
Kind of a toss-up if I'd go there or Valencia, but I really do lean towards Jerez.
I think Jerez makes better races, and it's just as crazy of a show. So you may as well go to Jerez if you're going to
go. Exactly. I think the view. I think at Jerez. I think the way the track is laid out and everything. That there's just it's like in a bowl.
And, well, Valencia's like that too. Valencia's definitely a track from everybody who's been there. You can watch the whole race from sitting in the stands.
Just sitting on the side. Yeah. But in any case, Jerez 2008. Jerez, a very tight and twisty track, often compared to somewhat like a go-kart track.
Mm-hmm.
But I think actually the shakeup that it sort of brings is interesting.
Well, it's more of a motorcycle track. It's got a bunch of slow corners that MotoGP bikes are maybe going a little slow and have to drop into first gear. But in general, I mean, it is a good motorcycle track. It's not like, you know, just stop and go. There's a couple of fast corners in there that are taking third gear or up. So it's a decent track. We've had some great racing there in the past. Obviously, we had that very controversial 2005 race with Gibernau and Rossi. When Rossi pushed Gibernau off the track,
allegedly,
but that's a long time ago. My God, that's a really long time ago already.
It is. I'm excited to see Sete next year. I'm sorry to digress, but okay. I really
it's going to be fantastic.
I'm looking forward to that.
Yep.
So
we had qualifying again, and once again, Lorenzo ended up on pole. Unbelievable! Two rounds in a row. First two rounds, basically, he has a perfect 100%. Qualifying record at that point. Pedrosa's second and third is Edwards. So again, Yamaha is up there with Hayden Rossi and Depunier on the second row. Stoner never liked this track, so he ended up on the third row, which is actually not a terrible position for him to be. He had a terrible... it was actually the only race where he didn't... where he finished like outside of the top five in... 2007, I believe.
I think you're right. Yeah,
but maybe
scrambling around frantically for paperwork here. But no, I think you're right. And Jerez is Stoner's. I don't know, Moby Dick. You know, Stoner's.
Yes.
You know, it's just it's this millstone about his neck. Whatever cliche, simile, whatever that we want to come up with. And I think it's much of it in anything is mental. He's never done well there. He's basically, frankly, he's always quite kind of sucked there in Stoner terms,
mm-hmm.
and I think he's having a tough time overcoming that. I think that he the last year particularly was a classic example of that of just this sort of kind of expecting to have problems, and so lo and behold, had problems.
So we had Lorenzo again on the pole, obviously, and Lorenzo Pedrosa, two Spaniards in Jerez. I mean, you couldn't ask for anything more.
Right.
But this time it was Pedrosa who who did the stoner basically and ran off with the lead right from the very beginning. He didn't lead on the first lap. That's about it.
Yeah, and I mean, and honestly, I'm having a little bit of trouble bringing this one up, you know, mentally, mm-hmm. of exactly what happened and everything. But looking at the lap chart, because I didn't go back and watch the race, which I should have done, but I didn't get a chance to go back and watch the race again. I'm having a little bit of trouble bringing it up, exactly memories of it. But looking at the lap chart, officially Pedrosa led every lap.
Right. Now, I think he pretty much led from the beginning. I guess the interesting thing was that Rossi and Lorenzo kind of stuck together for most of the race, but I don't really remember either being like an exciting way to stick around.
No,
for him, Hayden kind of stuck with them too, kind of dropped back. The big story in this race was Stoner, because he was coming off of a win and off of a championship season, and here's second race. He had an awful, awful time. He actually went off the racetrack twice, just basically running off, just too late on the brakes. One time he was completely on his own. Another time he was like in a sandwich with Nakano and I forget who else. I know Nakano was in there, and just almost took Nakano with him because he just had to go straight to go into the gravel. He ended up finishing the race actually in 11th place, so he did still get some points. Considering that he went off the track twice, it's pretty decent.
Right. Oh, yeah, it's very decent considering he went off the track twice, but I think it's an example of the nightmares that haunt Casey Stoner at Jerez.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I'm curious what's going to happen in Jerez 2009. You know, can he overcome this?
I think it's going to be actually very critical, because if you look at the first half of the entire season, 2008, if it wasn't for Jerez and Estoril, I think Casey Stoner would have been leading, and then everything would have been very, very different. I think there would have been a different state of mind in Laguna, different state of mind in Brno, different state of mind in Misano, and so on.
Right.
So
I
think
agree.
This was a very critical. At the time, we didn't know it. At the time, it just seemed like an exception to the rule with Stoner. But I think it was actually very important.
I think so, too. And this is where, you know, not to start stoner bashing, please don't send me a bunch of email, but this is where Valentino Rossi's racecraft / psychological advantage / insane doctor-ness or whatever it is, where it plays out, where it comes to the fore, that he just... You know, Rossi will have bad days and this and that. And you can tell he does get frustrated. We've seen him angry. We've seen him, you know, upset. But somehow or another, it's not quite the same as it is with Stoner. You know what I'm saying? Stoner sort of somehow, you know, not knocking Stoner, but Stoner lets it rattles him. Whereas with Rossi, it's different.
You mean like Rossi wouldn't go off the track angry?
Yeah. I mean, he might be, you know, mad at himself and stuff, but it wouldn't be somehow the same.
No, I think I know what you mean. It'd be interesting to know exactly, you know. I mean, it's these guys have very different personalities, those two. Mm-hmm. You know.
And, oh yeah.
But they're both incredible racers, and I think that Stoner's he's still a young kid, and he's learning that it's not just about getting up front and ticking off laps. There's off track battles, and there's on track mind battles, and all sorts of stuff that you know, he obviously got a big lesson about that last year. So anyway, he was I think the big story of this race, that he finished so far behind, because that ended up putting Pedrosa, who finished second in the first round, into the lead in the
of the championship. Right, 45 points.
Stoner
second
and
the first,
and
right?
So right. You know, at this point, we had Pedrosa leading, Lorenzo leading Rossi, and then Stoner, and then Dovizioso, the rookie, was in fifth. The other rookie, I mean, because Lorenzo obviously was the big star,
and Toadsland was the other rookie that you're not mentioning.
That's right. Yep. Now, what I want to kind of say is that I don't actually understand. I don't remember there being a rivalry between Pedrosa and Lorenzo. And I have this strange feeling that it was manufactured when Lorenzo was announced he was coming to MotoGP, possibly because he was coming on a Yamaha.
Lorenzo and Pedrosa?
Yeah.
I thought in 250s, from what I remember, I didn't think they were all that friendly.
I know, but the thing is they didn't really overlap for that long. They only overlapped for, I think, a season.
Yeah.
I may be completely wrong. If somebody knows exactly the story of this, it would be really good to find out, because it's been kind of bugging me, because I've heard about it. And on the podium at Jerez, the King of Spain came and made them shake hands. And like they were pretty much ignoring each other until that point. So it'd be very interesting to find the story behind that. Like, was it? I mean, because the Biaggi Rossi thing was kind of manufactured by the Italian press, and they kind of fell into it.
Yeah, fell into it very, very well.
Yeah,
which is unusual for Rossi to be manipulated by anybody rather than being a manipulator. I don't know. Now I'm trying to remember. Now you've got me doubting my memory. But the on the 250 side, it seems like so many of this. There's so many Spanish rivalries.
Yeah. You know,
Hector Barbera, Pedrosa at the time, Lorenzo at the time. All these guys that just nobody's their friend, and they they can't get along with anybody. There's none of the sort of friendly rivalry thing. They actually hate each other's guts. And I thought I recall, now that I'm doubting my memory, that Lorenzo was very much in that same classification, that he was just doesn't play well with others kind of a guy. And but yeah, now I'll have to check, because I can't think of any specific examples.
Well, somebody out there knows, I'm sure. So if you're listening, please send email in or to us at MotoGPOD@MotoGPOD.com and tell us what the real story there is.
Indeed. Okay.
I think that covers Jerez.
Yes.
So let's move on to the final chapter of this review, which was the crowning of the Lorenzo show, which is Estoril, the Portuguese GP.
The track has always reminded me in layout a little bit of like Catalonia, the way it's laid out. To an extent, except that Estoril, I think, has better elevation change. You've got that huge bus stop chicane corner thing that they got going on.
Beautiful chicane.
Not Estoril. Estoril.
Estoril, yeah. I know a lot of these tracks from the GP game on PS2, and this is one of the most fun tracks to actually race the computer against the computer on, because it's the only racetrack where you can actually have a race instead of just beating the crap out of the computer. So, because the chicane is so tricky,
it looks like an extraordinarily difficult track in real life.
Yeah.
to master. That it's up there with like Laguna, and
a lot of people actually say that the chicane is a little bit like the corkscrew going up.
Right. That you just, it's a mental thing, et cetera, whatever it is, there's something about it. And you watch him going through it, and you can see even on television where, the depth of field of the cameras and all that is so weird, it kind of distorts everything. That chicane looks impressive on television. In real life, it must be amazing.
Yeah, totally. So this time it was Lorenzo it wasn't from the start. From the start, it was Rossi who got up front very early on, and he led the race pretty much half distance. Meanwhile, behind him, it was Pedrosa and Lorenzo who were very close, and they stayed pretty close for a long time. Rossi then suddenly started losing grip about, I don't know, yeah, I think it was about halfway through the race. And at this point, I remember, like, after the race, he ended up in third place. But after the race, people were starting to really doubt his choice of going to the Bridgestones, because this was now, like, the third time where he kind of faded.
Right.
there was a very, very, very impressive pass that Lorenzo put on Rossi. He was lining him up for about two laps, and then he put on this fantastic pass right in that chicane and really forcibly put himself in there in front of Rossi, and I think he took Rossi by surprise. I don't think that broke Rossi's rhythm. I think Rossi actually did suffer a little bit after that from tire wear or some other problem. But that was something you don't do to Rossi. You know, like there's very few riders that dare do that and get away with it because usually he strikes right back. He was not unable to strike back. Lorenzo picked the perfect moment to do it, got away from him, and then Pedrosa ended up passing Rossi in a much more serene way. And you know, ended up finishing second. Not too far behind Lorenzo, but Lorenzo held his own. I mean, I think Lorenzo was controlling the race.
I agree on that one. And it was to call it the Lorenzo show for those first three rounds, I think is so apt. It was almost like the 2008 season was a little bit like several seasons, if you want to call it that, rolled into one, where you had, you know, just different riders are dominating and different fortunes are happening, you know, throughout. And you've seen Full Metal Jacket, right? Where it's almost like two movies in one.
Yeah.
And the season was a little bit like that, where it was a little bit like several seasons in one. You know,
we had
first three races, I thought Lorenzo was going to be, wow, this guy's going to be a rookie and he's going to be the champion, you know?
It was just amazing.
Spectacular.
There's very few riders who actually have had this kind of a start to the season. I think Biaggi is the only guy who also had three poles in a row. In his first season, or maybe it was just two. Actually, I think it was just two. So you know, Lorenzo broke also records at Estoril. Although he did, right. You know, I mean, Pedrosa won his second race out. In 2006,
right, but he didn't seem to dominate.
No, it didn't.
The first part of the season like that.
No, definitely not.
Even if you're not winning, you know, MotoGP rewards consistency. So you know, if you can always come in second, that's pretty damn good. Yeah. And that kind of a thing. And I mean, Lorenzo was just doing so well those first few races that it was looking like it was going to be Lorenzo's show for the year.
Indeed,
at the time. Way yep. back, you know, hindsight, but 2020 and all that business.
We had after this race, because Lorenzo won, Pedrosa was second, and Rossi was third, we had a tie in first place. I think it was an absolute tie. I'm just trying to check right now, because it was Lorenzo was 61 points, Pedrosa was 61. They each won a race, they each had a second place, and each had a third place.
Right. Because that's what you do is you go down to, if you have a tie for points on the first place, you go down to who has more second places, and et cetera, et cetera. And I think it was a dead heat.
Yeah. I think maybe it goes down to pole positions after that or something.
I believe so. Something. I mean, which they must have.
Because Lorenzo was officially leading at this point.
Right.
And I remember
exactly and even then, I think it goes down to the most recent win. If I recall.
Oh, that's right. That's what it is. The recent win first. Yep. Most recent win. So, it was at the end of the third race, we were looking at a very interesting championship. Rossi was at this point back from these guys 14 points, and then Stoner was 7 points behind Rossi. Stoner had another crappy race. He actually finished 6th, so it doesn't seem that crappy, but He apparently had trouble with it. Was one of those bizarre things. He had trouble with one of the onboard cameras. Do you remember this?
Yes.
It was falling out of his fairing, and there was a couple of shots of him going down the straight where he was shoving that thing back in. I mean, that's pretty.
He eventually just basically like tore it off.
I think so, and
threw it aside. And we discussed at the time that there was probably some poor schlub in MotoGP land that.
Was extremely fired?
Yeah, probably. Probably lost his job. If not, didn't lose his job. He certainly got, you know, a very stiff talking to for letting that happen. Because we were wondering what it was. What was that, you know, Casey and I remember there was speculation that it was some, you know, some kind of bit on the bike or another. And it turned out it was a camera. In a nutshell, you know, came off.
Yeah.
And started flapping around and all that. And it's kind of a big distraction and... And it's kind of funny that, you know, God knows how much they spend on these cameras and all this sort of thing. But, you know, Stunner just yanks it off and throws it to the side of the track. It's like, you know, I'm done with this.
And rightly so. So, yeah, so he finished sixth but retained fourth position. But fifth was Toseland. You know, he had another sixth finish. I think he had three sixes in a row. Was that it?
I believe it was. Let's see.
Yep.
Yeah. Well, wait. He had six, and then a seventh.
Oh, sorry, seventh. You're right. Because yeah. Hopkins got fifth, Stoner got sixth. Yep.
Yeah.
Hopper actually was doing really well in this race. This is a track he's always done pretty well in.
That's the most points he scored all season long.
Is it?
Yes.
Oh,
that
man.
Was his highest finish. He got 11 points, which is rescue me here, Jules.
Fifth place.
Yeah.
But. Because that's right. Because he was on the podium in 2007, not 2008.
Right. Yep. And for the 2008 season, and pretty much after that, Hopper's fortunes took a nosedive because he started, you know, hurting himself.
Right. Yeah. Starting in China, actually, next race.
Exactly. And So this he got 11 points on that race, and that was his highest finish.
Yikes.
Yeah.
And now he doesn't have a ride. So full circle.
Way yikes. But he's got all that monster money, which got to
mean
something.
That's right.
Yeah.
Because energy drinks are going to solve the world economic problems. And
I'd like to see Hopkins' garage right now. The cases and cases of monsters stacked up.
What, lifetime supply? Is that how they pay him?
Pretty much, yeah. There you go. Here's more monsters. Like, I don't need this crap. I need a motorcycle ride. Wow, that's harsh.
That is harsh. Before we finish the review, we should also mention that Dovi crashed in Jerez and put a halt to his an amazing rookie season, because until that point he was very close to the leaders in points, but obviously he scored zero that time.
Right.
Lorenzo
did come back to do some stellar rookie.
Oh yeah.
Goodness.
But this was very painful. I mean, you know. To win a championship, you probably only allowed, you know, one bad race, as they say.
Right.
You know, but
right. One bad, especially with the field that we have now. You've got, you know, you're battling against Rossi and Stoner, slightly, barely, not really second tier, but like the slight notch down. Pedrosa
and Lorenzo,
maybe. Yeah, Lorenzo, maybe to an extent, somewhat, almost nudging in that range. Hayden a little bit. Not so much last year, you know, that you cannot afford to have a bad race. You know, one is all you get.
Yep.
And Dovizioso did a great job, but it was a very difficult year to be a rookie last year.
Yeah.
And, you know, the competition for rookie of the year was very, very, very fierce.
I believe Hayden also came off at Estoril. I believe they came off at the exact same place. I don't recall, but I know that it was like one lap between the two when they came off, and they both came off at the same place. And it was also a place where they came off during practice, so there's something tricky about that particular corner.
Right, because Hayden got no points at Estoril at all. So
yeah, but I know he crashed immediately after Dovi, like the lap after, and I think it was in the exact same place. Like
yeah, if I recall correctly, you're right. So yeah.
So there it is. So you know, this was the Lorenzo show. At this point, everybody was just like, "Wow!" And the other cool thing was the other thing that I think stuck out was that he wasn't being an ass.
Right, exactly. He was being Mr. Sportsman.
Yeah.
Yes, we were impressed with that.
Cool.
Because I do recall also that one of the things I was looking forward to the 2008 season was somewhat, and I'll admit, this is me being a bit shallow, but that you know, the soap opera of Lorenzo and Rossi and the friction of Lorenzo and what's this going to add to the whole show, if you will, the whole soap opera of MotoGP and that sort of thing. And it was, you know, Lorenzo disappointed me. He's like, wow, he's being Mr. Nice Guy. What the hell?
And we should mention that because Rossi was on the Bridgestones, which was actually, so, you know, going back to 2007 when they were signing contracts, Lorenzo was very adamant about getting the same equipment as Rossi, but then Rossi went and pulled his strings and got his Bridgestones that he really wanted at that point. He was done with Michelins. And they actually put a wall in between the two. And, they, you know, the wall stayed up the whole season. So I think Lorenzo came into this series with expectations of being more of a teammate to Valentino Rossi. They certainly had no reason to hate each other or anything like that. But they were very much divided. It was almost like two separate teams. I don't know how much data they actually shared.
I don't think much. From
what
we heard,
they certainly didn't help each other in racing.
Like,
you know, during the actual races, they weren't helping each other or the way, like for example, Colin Edwards did in 2006. You know, helping out Rossi at Estoril.
Colin was the perfect teammate.
Yep.
But yeah, you didn't see any of that with Lorenzo. I mean, you know, whatever chances there were, he would take them. You know, as we'll see here in the next future couple of shows, his fortunes, you know, there's only so much he could do or what have you. But yeah, no.
Cool.
Not at all.
All right. Anything else you want to talk about?
I think we're good.
The car is still happening. It's going to be over this weekend. So if you guys want to catch up with, you know, there's some exciting stuff going on. We're not really in bikes, but the car is just fun to watch. Pretty much all the vehicle classes are fun to watch.
Always, it is. It's good stuff. And television coverage of that continues through most of January. So at least in the U.S. on Versus.
Right.
So if I recall. I think it's like right up through like the maybe the it might even be through the 30th of January, something like that. They've got some, you know, highlight shows and this and that and the other that are going right on through. So so that's something to see. Dakar is always interesting stuff, even though it's no longer really the Dakar Rally.
It retained the name.
Oh, we had a that's actually sad. I want to mention that there was a helicopter crash. And we've actually had a couple of deaths already in Dakar. Dakar is dangerous stuff.
The helicopter crash was with fatalities?
I believe so. And if not, there was also another fatality this year.
Well, the fatality that you're talking about for sure was the one with Pascal Théry. And it's weird. They basically found him under a tree with, you know, he seemed to have gotten off his bike, was drinking some water, having a snack. And I don't know what the diagnosis of his death was, but he was found dead.
And I thought the helicopter crash also resulted in fatalities, but I do admit I like Googled, you know, Dakar helicopter crash, and I came up with a lot of hits where, you know, there's been a lot of helicopter crashes in Dakar. So I'm not 100%
dust storms. I mean, they went through a desert that has not seen a drop of rain in like 300 years.
Yeah, insane. Yeah.
You know, so there's some crazy, strange weather patterns. There's weird dust storms and stuff. And, you know, flying around that stuff is just as dangerous as being on the ground, if not more so.
Sure. Does anything actually grow there? If it hasn't rained in 300 years, does anything grow?
I doubt it.
I mean, where would the water come from?
I have no idea. I have no idea.
It makes me glad to live in Oregon, frankly.
is it raining over there right now?
Not right now, no. It's a little foggy, though. And it's damn cold. But, damn cold for here is like, I don't know, it might be in the 30s. It's not like damn cold, you know? Well, all right. This is fun. I like covering the Lorenzo show. It was good stuff. So, again, unless you have something else, call it a day.
Yeah, call it a wrap.
All right. Congratulations to the newest winner of the Formula One Blog Bravado Award. Jules, did you have a speech? Did you prepare a speech at all?
No. I'd like to thank Max Mosley for, you know, all the...
For being entertaining.
Hilarity.
Yes.
All the hilarity of 2008.
Yes, the hilarity. Exactly. I know. The whole Nazi hooker thing is just priceless. It really is. I mean, I guess if I was going to pay for hookers, I'd want them to dress up in Nazi uniforms too. You know, I mean, come on, French maid, Nazis, whatever.
Right.
Wow, that might be cut out. But okay. So, all right, we will talk to you again next week, Jules, for part two of MotoGP. Which what's your cute catchy title for that?
I'm not really sure yet. I think it's gonna. But let's save it.
Okay. Okay. We will. We had part one, the Lorenzo Show, part two, to be determined. And we will talk to you again next week about all of that. And thanks a lot. So long.
And probably Bill Kawasaki.
Oh, definitely. And maybe Suzuki even.
Right. Okay. Ciao.
That's going to do it for today's show. Comparatively speaking, it's a little bit relatively short one, but you know, we're trying to keep them down to about an hour, that kind of range, sort of a thing. Thanks very much again to FormulaOneBlog.com, their podcast there, Todd and Grace over there, for awarding Jules the Matt Bishop Bravado Award, and somewhat also by general vicinity, I kind of glommed onto that a little bit. They sort of mentioned that, so I'm so proud. But in any case, it's good stuff. And if you're not listening to the Formula One blog, you should check it out. Go to FormulaOneBlog.com. That's Formula, the word spelled out, one, the numeral one, and then blog, B-L-O-G, FormulaOneBlog.com. And you can register for their podcast, and they've got a forum, very, very active forum. A lot of good stuff going on over there. They talk, obviously, about Formula One, but they also talk a lot about other series, including MotoGP. Grace is a big MotoGP fan. She is turning Todd into a big MotoGP fan because, as you know, once you start watching MotoGP, you can't help but be hooked. So we are done for this week, and we will talk to you again next week. And until then, keep the shiny side up and the rubber side down, and we'll talk to you later. MotoGPOD is produced by Bob Hayes, and I am solely responsible for its content. MotoGP is a trademark of Dorner Sports SL, and the MotoGPOD podcast and MotoGPOD.com are not affiliated with Dorner Sports SL. All other trademarks are the property of their respective owners, and MotoGPOD is not affiliated with any of them.
Oh, come on, Jules.
Cut, 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 cut! You got to put this at the end of the show, I know it.
I'm going to put that at the end of the show.
Oh my God.